This is special coverage from WBUR in Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Tonight, they've been railing against Israel, liberalism, and the American government for years, at times making their points with fertilizer bombs, bullets, even anthrax hoax letters, and they're right in our backyard. Now, how is America's right-wing fringe responding to the war on terrorism? First, a closer look at the terrorist threat from the Al-Qaeda network. Scott Baldoff of the Christian Science Monitor reports that Osama bin Laden's hand-picked biographer, Pakistani journalist Hamid Mir, doubts that bin Laden is actually leading the terrorist organization. I spoke to Scott earlier today from Islamabad, Pakistan.
Well, Hamid Mir is the editor of a Pakistani newspaper written in the Urdu language called the Daily Ausaf that's here in Islamabad. It's widely respected by much of the political class here. He met Osama bin Laden on a trip into Afghanistan to Kandahar back in 1997, and through subsequent trips was told that he would be the perfect candidate to do a biography of Osama bin Laden.
Mir says that, in fact, bin Laden is not the true leader of the Al-Qaeda network, that the real brains behind the organization is an Egyptian radical named Ayman al-Zawahiri. What do we know about him, and why does Hamid Mir think he's actually running Al-Qaeda?
The key for Mr. Mir is the levels of experience. Osama bin Laden is a man who basically cut his teeth in Afghanistan fighting against the Soviet presence here, whereas Ayman al-Zawahiri was someone who had been involved in radical movements in Egypt for a number of years and is connected with a number of terrorist attacks, including the attack on foreign tourists in Egypt back in 97. Mm-hmm. He's someone who has the global vision that al-Qaeda at least presents of unifying Muslims in a drive to undo the power of the American-led West.
Did we see Ayman al-Zawahiri sitting beside bin Laden in the videotaped message from beneath a rock wall that got so much play on U.S. and Middle Eastern television?
Yeah, that was Mr. Zawahiri. He was the one who spoke first. Now, of course, his speech was one that in some ways was more broad than Mr. bin Laden's. But Mr. bin Laden's speech was, of course, the more memorable one because this is the one who we had all been led to believe was the man in charge of al-Qaeda and the man who inspired the attack on the World Trade Center. He also has the name that's easier to pronounce.
What do we need to know about the difference between these two men or the makeup of the al-Qaeda organization to effectively fight this threat? Why does this really matter?
Well, why this matters is that if the United States is building its policy and is going to measure its success in this war based on whether they capture or kill Osama bin Laden, they may find that there's an organization left behind that is equally capable and perhaps more capable of leading it in his absence. And certainly there's every indication that Mr. Zawahiri is capable of that. He has led attacks through his own organization, first with al-Jihad and then finally with Islamic Jihad, both of them based out of Egypt. And these organizations in Egypt were certainly powerful enough and radical enough to be involved with everything from the assassination of Anwar Sadat to, once again, the massacre of foreign tourists. And if he's capable of doing that, he's capable of doing more. And there certainly are a number of people beyond those two who are also have that global vision and the strong hatred of the United States.
Of course, many people with Osama bin Laden don't buy this theory. Why are some so convinced that it is indeed bin Laden that is the leader as he appears?
There are other journalists, as you say, who, for instance, I met a gentleman with Abu Dhabi TV who's known Osama for a number of years and completely disagrees that Osama does not have it. He says that if you were to listen to him preach in the mosques in Peshawar, if you were to hear his vision, he is a very inspiring orator. He has a great political voice, and he would be perfectly capable of leading the organization. But again, the point is that if you're going after one man may not be enough.
It would seem either way that this is a big further indication of the depth of the al-Qaeda organization.
Absolutely. They do have that expertise. It goes very deep, and there are people who are highly committed to this and have been for years. the key to all this may be much beyond going after, in a political assassination form, going after one or even a half dozen men. It may take quite a while.
Scott Baldoff is a reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. I spoke to him from Islamabad, Pakistan. The National Abortion Federation reports that since September 11th, nearly three times as many abortion clinics have received anthrax hoax letters as in the previous 3 years combined, 250 as of last week. The war on terrorism is stirring up a lot of people, and not all of them are in Afghanistan. Some are Americans born and bred with a grievance list that could almost have been written by Osama bin Laden himself. How is America's radical right-wing fringe responding to the war on terror? Are they calling their members to action? Joining me now is Daniel Levitas, an expert on right-wing hate groups and the author of a forthcoming book on U.S. militia groups. Welcome, Daniel Levitas.
Good evening.
And to our listeners, are you concerned that American hate groups could take advantage of the current crisis? How great is our homegrown terrorist threat? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. Daniel Levitas, thanks so much for being with us. We don't get much news about this in mainstream news coverage, but yet you follow it, and there's a very, very active dialogue going on in right-wing and radical groups, white supremacist groups. Can you give us a sense of the groups that you follow and the messages that are coming out of those groups in the wake of September 11th?
Well, certainly. And first of all, it's important to remember that while there are many different groups, literally hundreds of neo-Nazi, racist, and white supremacist groups in the United States, many of them quite small, collectively they do make up a movement. It may be regarded as a marginal social movement from the perspective of mainstream politics, but it is a social movement nonetheless, and it is an active social movement. Immediately after September 11th, we saw some of these groups, like the neo-Nazi Aryan Nations, or other groups like the American Nazi Party, the Posse Comitatus, another example, a right-wing group that's been around for 30 years, actually cheering the collapse of the World Trade Centers, seeing it as possibly an opportunity to encourage their followers to go out and commit acts of violence.
So what are the major themes of this radical right-wing and militia response? What leads these people to cheer when those towers come down?
Well, one of the major themes is cheering. There are several others which we can get to in a moment. What mm-hmm. leads them to that is an ideology not that much different from that of Osama bin Laden and his followers, that is rooted in vicious and visceral anti-Semitism, hatred of Jews, a belief that the United States and the world, in fact, is run by a shadowy international Jewish conspiracy. And this is a theory that has been around for a very long time. It was, by the way, popularized in this country by no less a person than Henry Ford, the great automobile magnate. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that's driving them is visceral anti-Semitism, hatred of the government, because, again, a belief that the government is not serving the interests of the white Aryan majority, but instead is simply serving the interests of Jews or racial and ethnic minorities. And much the same frame of mind that drove Timothy McVeigh to kill 168 people and Terry Nichols to kill 168 people in Oklahoma City when they destroyed the federal building there in 1995.
It's tempting to think that maybe this is just the ranting of very, very marginal people on the Internet, but only last weekend, Bob Woodward was writing in the Washington Post, and others have written as well, including locally in the Boston Globe, that many aspects of the current anthrax attacks point to a domestic source, not necessarily, in fact, maybe not at all, to a foreign terrorist threat. Is there a sense that there could be some kind of connection to the kind of groups that you follow in this very material threat we're facing right now?
Well, I think we would be doing ourselves and the country a disservice if we didn't put the domestic neo-Nazi movement and right-wing hate groups on the list of most likely suspects for the current anthrax attacks. Now, in saying that, that doesn't mean that I think that they should be looked at more closely than Al-Qaeda or more closely than a lone individual who just has some particular personalized grievance. But I say that just to point to the fact that, and law enforcement is looking in this direction anyway, that we cannot rule out the possibility of a domestic source, be that an individual or be that a right-wing hate group or an individual affiliated with such a group. Right-wing groups have shown a lot of interest in bioterrorism over the years. Luckily, they haven't had any success yet in actually killing anyone with it. But as we get, again, as we saw with Oklahoma City, we can should not underestimate the, either the ability or the willingness of followers of this movement to kill innocent civilians to advance their own particular political agenda.
And as you say, there's been a bit of piling on. Let's listen to just a clip of that. This is a bit of tape from Dr. William Pierce. He's the author of the Turner Diaries, head of the National Alliance, which bills itself as the world's foremost organization in the interest of white Americans.
Let's punish Osama bin Laden, but then let's go after the real criminals, the traitors in Washington, who really are the ones responsible for the September 11th attack. And then let's send all of the Middle Easterners, including those now controlling Hollywood and Madison Avenue and our television networks and the rest of our news and entertainment media, back to the Middle East for good.
That was Dr. William Pierce with the Pierce with the National Alliance. We're joined by Daniel Levitas. He's an expert on right-wing hate groups and the author of a forthcoming book on militia groups in the United States. We're talking about the response of right-wing hate groups to September 11th and the war on terrorism. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. The Washington Post and others are reporting that the source of the anthrax threat may in fact be domestic, not foreign. And clearly, there's a very interesting piling on by a bunch of these groups. That's one example we just heard, Daniel Levitas. Can you give us some other examples of the kind of response we've seen since September 11th?
Certainly. Let me make one comment about William Pierce, though. Mm-hmm. That was a mild message from William Pierce. This is a man who believes not in sending quote-unquote Middle Easterners, and by that he means Jews, not in sending Jews back to the Middle East, but in fact in killing every Jew on the planet, in killing every black person. This is what he advocates in his books, like the Turner Diaries, which inspired in part Timothy McVeigh to blow up the federal building.
You know, we saw another National Alliance member, Bill Roper, had this message. He said, "Anyone who's willing to drive a plane into a building to kill Jews is all right by me. I wish our members had half as much testicular fortitude." I mean, this sort of totally dripping with venom kind of messages that applauded what happened on September 11th.
And William Pierce, it should be known, was an associate professor of physics at Oregon State University. So this is a man who is not, didn't just fall off the turnip truck, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Some examples of other responses by a man from Pennsylvania named August Kreese, who runs a group I mentioned, the Posse Comitatus, mm-hmm. that's Latin for power of the county. And he says, "My suggestion to all brethren, sit back and watch the death throes of this Babylonian beast system, and later we can get involved in cleanup operations."
Mm.
Basically, these groups have, since the early 1980s, been looking to foment civil disorder, riots, and the collapse of American society, on the ashes of which they believe they can build a new Aryan civilization. It's a positively deluded frame of mind, but it's that kind of delusion that led groups back in 1984, for example, like the Order, to get plans, for example, of major dams in the West that they then thought they might destroy, and thereby causing floods in Los Angeles, precipitating race riots, and thereby, again, bringing about their vision of a white revolution.
Daniel Levitas, we have to take a quick break. We have to take a quick break.
Sorry.
We'll come right back. We're talking about the response of the radical right, the white supremacists, the American fanatics, to September 11th. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. Are you tuned in to fanatics on the home front? And is there an intersection of the interests of Osama bin Laden and some fanatic Americans? Is this another real threat or just hot words? Join us on the telephone or at our online location, WBUR.org, special coverage. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to Special Coverage from WBUR Boston. This is Special Coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about the response of radical right-wing American groups to the events of September 11th. Let's listen now to a clip from the Reverend Fred Phelps, who bills himself as pastor of the Westboro Baptist Church in Topeka, Kansas. It's taken from a sermon called God Hates America on the website GodHatesFags.com.
Since those airplanes plowed into the World Trade Center, everybody's having his say, nonstop, 24 hours a day. And there hadn't been a word of truth spoken in the whole time so far as the Word of God is concerned. The truth of the matter is that God hates America, and those calamities are none other than the rod of God smiting fag America.
We're talking about the radical right wing's response to September 11th. There's been a kind of piling on, even a kind of strange applause. We're joined this hour by Daniel Levitas. He's an expert on right wing hate groups. You can join the conversation as well at 1-800-423-8255. How serious is this threat? In a time of crisis, is it just hot air, or is there a real threat somewhere in all this hot language? We're also joined now by Andy Tarsi. He's the Eastern States Civil Rights Director for the Anti-Defamation League. Good evening, Andy Tarsi.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. Thanks very much for joining us. I know you've been tracking this issue as well. What do you see since September 11th, Andy Tarsi, in what's coming out of the fanatic groups within the United States?
You know, Daniel really started us off with some of the important trends. I think that we're looking at some plain old opportunism in a sense, and one of the things you touched on in the conversation I think is true is some of this is just an opportunity for them to focus better with more people listening, maybe. Mm-hmm. They hope the same messages that they've been selling hostility to law enforcement and government, suspicion of any kind of increase in government powers, blaming Israel and Jews and conspiracies that are centuries old about Jews and what they can do to control the world economy, and really the same old stuff. And it's certainly out there. It's very provocative and often loaded, as you've discussed already, with some very violent imagery.
Even some weird kind of shame and embarrassment or awe at the nerve and fervor of these September 11th terrorists, a kind of almost jealousy for what they pulled off. The American Nazi Party says these were a handful of very brave people who were willing to die for whatever they believed in. If we were one-tenth as serious, we just might get something started somewhere. You can hear both the frustration at the lack of support that these groups have generally found in the United States and also a kind of weird admiration for what happened on the 11th.
Well, before you, that's true. But before you leave it there, you of course also have to know that the same American Nazi Party is referring to the Arabs involved with incredibly graphic, derogatory, racist language. They spare no adjective, if you will, referring to the towel heads and what they call sand niggers, if you'll pardon my use of the term on the air. It's really horrendous racism, and that is only going to stoke the fires of violence, which have, you know, we see two kinds of backlash so far that are clear. One is against anyone who's perceived to be anything like a Muslim or an Arab, and the other, which is much more sophisticated in a way and has emerged more slowly, is an anti-Jewish backlash. It's most virulent on the margins, but will seep in to the discourse in a number of ways.
Daniel Levitas and Andy Tarsi, I want to ask both of you, Daniel Levitas first, is there a sense in which the events of September 11th are a goad or a challenge to American fringe groups? Does it somehow up the ante or set a frightening new standard?
Well, I think that
clearly it did up the ante, not just for domestic right-wing groups, but even for further terrorism worldwide. It's almost a case now of, can you top this? First, it was 168 people dead in the Oklahoma City federal building, the most dramatic act of terrorism on American soil, and now we have thousands upon thousands of people dead. And I think that when individuals on the radical right think to come again at America with violence, they will be looking, hopefully not, but they will be looking to do something of a grand scale. You asked what's the scope of the threat. I just want to address that very quickly. There are several thousand extremely hardcore members of radical right-wing organizations in the United States today. And by several thousand, I mean people who really are committed to committing acts of violence. There are tens of thousands of members of these movements and various groups when you add them all together, and certainly close to 100 to 250,000 people who buy the literature of the movement and read the literature regularly and agree with it. So in the broad picture of things, you got a couple of 100,000 people out there who buy the international Jewish conspiracy line and who buy the general militancy of it. But when you get down to people who are actually willing to go out and kill someone in pursuit of these beliefs, that's a small number of people. Mm-hmm. But as we saw with Oklahoma City, you only needed two people there. And as we saw with September 11th, you only needed perhaps a couple of hundred at most. And that's what concerns me about the next phase of this with regard to domestic terrorism, that if a small handful of half a dozen folks get a martyr complex inspired by their racism and anti-Semitism here at home, they may well go out and commit some severe damage, and we want the FBI and the Justice Department to prevent that, to be working aggressively to prevent that. I don't know if they can do that given their person power problem right now.
All being applied to the foreign threat at the moment. Andy Tarsi with the Anti-Defamation League, what's your level of concern about 9/11 ratcheting up the level of vitriol and potentially violence?
I'm very concerned about it on two levels. One is the potential for real violence, and the second is what is the cultural cost of a free society where this will happen, and where will it affect discourse sort of more towards the center in the world. Let me go to talk about the first. And we really ought to get an anthropologist in on the conversation, because one of the things that some people observe in the hate movement is once you become the head honcho in one of these organizations, you have more to lose. You become the establishment in the anti-establishment, and you're less likely to be the one who's actually going to throw it all away. The ego that they get from being prominent.
You mean throw it away by risking your personal security by doing something criminal?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And there are exceptions for every rule. But what I'm suggesting is that if you look at the two young men who were sentenced in the Sacramento synagogue torchings recently, and you look at Benjamin Smith, who was under the influence of World Church of the Creator and went on a deadly shooting spree in the Midwest two summers ago, you look at, around the country at the acts of violence committed by people in these groups, it's not always the leader. It's often somebody who came under their influence, who had even wanted to be outside of the outsiders and had to go that extra step. And so I object to the use of the word kooks when we talk about these people. And I know that people just use it as common parlance. But
it suggests something funny.
Well, it suggests funny, but it also suggests that they're crazy or that they can be disregarded. In fact, they can be very, very serious and methodical and ideologically driven to an end and have a real mission. So that's number one. Yes, those are people who can certainly wind up causing some major damage, as we all know, having seen McVeigh and a number of these other killings. The second, and I'll just touch on it, and then if we want to pick up on it, I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts, Daniel's thoughts, is when a community is targeted like this, even if it's from the wings, and we've seen it lately, in literature distributions on front lawns and driveways all over America. The World Church of the Creator, the National Alliance, the Klans are widely distributing their literature right now.
And targeting which community specifically?
Well, you know what? They don't seem to be targeting households that are of a particular race or religion. It's sort of like I'm driving through this particular town or that particular town. I'm going to dump 200 Xerox copies of a packet of leaflets off on my way.
Right, and what dynamic do you see there?
Well, what we see is that the community, members within that community who are, say, Jewish or black or, mm-hmm. or Arab or whatever it is, but mm-hmm. are hearing from the public, oh, it's just a bunch of kooks. And nobody bothers to say, hey, you know, by the way, if it makes you nervous, we don't believe that stuff.
Andy and Daniel Levitas, stand by. We want to bring our callers into this conversation. We have a lot who would like to join. We're talking about the response of the extreme, the radical right wing and white supremacists to the events of September 11th. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. Dennis is on the line. Welcome, Dennis. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd be interested to know from Mr. Levitas, we're talking about the response of the right-wing group and all the piling on and the opportunistic actions they've been taking. But I'm a little worried, given what we've learned from Waco, from Oklahoma City, now after September 11th. What should the FBI, the Justice Department, do without just fanning the fires even more? And what I mean is there's been a lot of talk about temporarily curbing civil liberties to an extent, you know, broader powers for wider taps.
But you're afraid that only makes the problem worse.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your question, Dennis.
Thank you.
Daniel Levitas?
Well, let me just address one of those points, the broader powers for wiretapping, because if we get into a whole discussion of the anti-terrorism bill and civil liberties, we'll be here all night.
But this was just passed last week, broader powers.
For a future show. Mm. But, you know, one of the problems that the Justice Department was really faced with was that technology had gotten way ahead of the law on this issue. And if you were a terrorist or a smart member of a domestic terrorist group and you wanted to communicate with your fellow followers and orchestrate an act of violence, you could go from one cell phone to another, from one payphone to another, from one computer to another, mm-hmm. and basically stay well ahead of law enforcement in your communication.
And you're saying that's no longer the case with the new legislation?
Well, the new legislation, which provides authority for roving wiretaps, is supposed to stop that. The Clinton administration sought that after Oklahoma City, and frankly, I'll be honest, as a civil libertarian myself, I had a great deal of hesitancy and didn't favor that in the wake of Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. In the wake of September 11th, my thinking changed on that, and kind of the light bulb went off, and I said, you know, technology has gotten ahead of the law on this issue. I don't really see where people's civil rights in any large or small scale are compromised by roving wiretaps. The benefits certainly outweigh the good.
Andy Tarsi, how about you?
Everything in the anti-terrorism bill is a good thing, mm-hmm. and I'm glad they sunsetted a number of those provisions. Mm-hmm. But I think that some of those tools, not all of them, but some of those tools are needed.
Andy Tarsi, what about you? What solutions? Dennis is looking for how can we respond in a way that limits the potential damage here without further damaging civil rights?
Well, you know, that's the balance, and there's no answer that is so crisp and neat that we can just deliver it. But we certainly can't let the anti-government sentiment of the radical right drive policy. If we need, as we've decided as a nation that we do, more powers in certain areas, then we'll have those powers. We'll still ask that they be used judiciously. They'll be subject to the review of courts. They'll be subject to hopefully responsible oversight, both in the administrative side and in Congress. And, you know, we'll have to watch it. We'll have to decide what the limits on that power are going to be. But, you know, those powers are being expanded within a very, very reliable judicial framework. It's not vigilante time in the United States, and we have to give the government the opportunity to be on the same technological level as the people they're trying to fight.
I guess that's where we're headed. Andy Tarsi, thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you very much.
Andy Tarsi is Eastern State Civil Rights Director for the Anti-Defamation League. I want to bring another guest in now. This is Vicky Saporta, is Executive Director of the National Abortion Federation, a professional organization for abortion providers in the United States and Canada. Hello, Vicky Saporta.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening. Thanks very much for joining us. You have direct experience of what's happened since the 11th in terms of the venom and violent threats directed against abortion clinics. What's the picture been there?
Well, the week of October 15th, we had 269 women's reproductive health care clinics, which received anthrax threat letters in 17 states plus the District of Columbia.
That sounds like an explosion of threats.
Yes, it's the single largest orchestrated threat campaign against any one type of facility. Unfortunately, this is not new to abortion providers who have been targeted for more than 20 years.
But what do you see since September 11th then?
Harassment. Well, it has brought out our domestic terrorists once again, who believe that somehow they can be justified in using lethal force against abortion providers. These letters were signed by the Army of God, which is a domestic terrorist group which believes it's okay to murder abortion providers. And they're similar to international terrorists in that they spread hate and kill and terrorize people in the name of God. And it's very important that we have very swift and aggressive law enforcement response to deal with them.
Have you found strong law enforcement response given the current demands on law enforcement to ferret out foreign terrorists?
Well, we asked for a meeting with the FBI last week, and we met with several key agents, and they have classified these anthrax threat letters as domestic terrorism, and they've opened a national investigation. So their domestic terrorist unit and their unit of weapons of mass destruction will be investigating, and there's a penalty of up to 10 years in a federal prison for each count. And so it's important that law enforcement response is very aggressive, and they take these acts seriously and treat them as a priority so they can deter future acts of violence, because next time these threats could in fact be real, because the domestic terrorists we're dealing with wouldn't hesitate to use anthrax if they had it. So far, all the test results have been negative, which we're grateful for, since that means none of our members' lives or health are at risk. But we need to treat all of these letters very seriously, because we don't know when, in fact, they will cease to be hoaxes.
Daniel Levitas, we just have a minute before the break, but you quoted earlier from someone who was decrying the Babylonian beast system, and this is where the intersection with Osama bin Laden's social conservatism seems like it might come in. Abortion is just a part of that. What else is targeted in the messages of these groups?
Well, it's anti-abortion, it's anti-lesbian and gay rights. Those are two very prominent themes that we've seen. And although the rantings of the American Nazi Party may appeal to only a handful of people, we shouldn't lose sight of the statements made by the likes of Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson immediately after September 11th, where they in fact said that the terrorist attacks were the result basically of legalizing abortion and removing prayer from public school. And so that contributes further to a climate of hatred and violence, and leads, again, in my opinion, to the targeting by domestic terrorists, with groups like the Army of God, targeting of abortion providers and health care providers.
We have to take a quick break. Vicky Saporta, thank you very much for joining us this hour. Vicky Saporta is Executive Director of the National Abortion Federation, a professional organization for abortion providers in the United States and Canada. We're talking about the rise and riled-up state of the extreme right wing in the United States since September 11th. How much of a threat do you think it is? It's not only foreign terrorism, apparently, that we have to worry about. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to special coverage from WBUR Boston. This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about the extreme American right and its response to the September 11th bombings. Here's a message from the leader of the 7th Missouri Militia. He says the resistance may well have to carry out a policy of low-cost, cheap, effective biological warfare measures, making it in effect impossible to ever again have a social order capable of maintaining any form of evil empire. He said, he goes on, I've been wishing that the Arabs had stolen a couple of hundred jumbo jets and crashed them into the Supreme Court, Congress, Capitol, J. Edgar Hoover, FBI building, all 50 state capitals, a damn good start. The extreme right in America has really been charged up by the 9/11 bombings in lots of directions. We're talking about it this hour with Daniel Levitas. He's an expert on right-wing hate groups. We welcome you to the conversation as well. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Marilyn's on the line. Welcome, Marilyn.
Thank you very much. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a piece of information and a kind of hypothetical question that really indicates how very complex this whole situation is. Just about the time of the September 11 attack, I got an issue from the Southern Center on Law and Poverty, which I support.
Which follows these issues closely.
Right, and which you know has, in fact, been attacked itself so violently that they're now trying to put up a building that will protect them from extreme bomb attacks, fire attacks, etc. But anyhow, my point is this, that issue was on, the entire issue was on the link-up between neo-Nazi and right-wing and hate groups and militia in this country and international terrorist groups across the world. I remember reading that just before September 11 and being quite concerned and frightened, actually, by what I read. And then after the attacks, President Bush said, we will go after any country that harbors terrorists. Now, we have freedom of speech in this country. People can say what you just read. They can distribute literature of that type. And yet, we're harboring terrorists. And there are own people, at least they're Americans, who are saying, boy, we wish they had done 100 times that job on you. I find this a conundrum, and I would be interested in hearing you and your guests discuss this.
Marilyn, thanks for your call. Daniel Levitas, what about it? Marilyn raises the possibility of actual links between extreme right-wingers in the United States and international terrorist groups. Have you seen evidence to that effect?
Well, there certainly is an international network, a global network, within the neo-Nazi and white supremacist movement. And, for example, Holocaust deniers have been meeting internationally for years. Neo-Nazis from Germany who say the Holocaust was a hoax and never happened, meeting with individuals from the Middle East who say also that the Holocaust didn't happen, who have a different agenda but a common aim. Now, so there is a commonality, and there are global networks and global links. There are skinheads and neo-Nazis from Europe that come to America to participate in weapons training with American skinheads because of the tremendous availability of semi-automatic weapons here in the United States and so forth. Going more specifically to the question, is it possible that an international terrorist network like Al-Qaeda might rely on or develop a functional linkage with a group like the Aryan Nations or a militia movement? We have not seen hard evidence of that, and frankly, I think that would be unlikely to happen in the short term anyway. I'm not ruling it out, but unlikely to happen simply given the fact that the domestic right-wing hate groups are not as sophisticated when it comes to operating in an intelligence environment. And although clearly the folks with Al-Qaeda made any one of a number of mistakes that we should have picked up on before September 11th, they masterminded a fairly sophisticated scheme using dozens of people and a broad-based international support and financial network. I don't think they're going to jeopardize that by linking up with some militia guy in Missouri
and
who's likely to spill the beans.
Right, and in fairness, I haven't heard anyone really suggesting that. There's too much racial and probably religious enmity there in any case. But I'm struck by the weird kind of confluence of interests here. The Al-Qaeda would like to see the global system of economy shut down. They'd like to see very conservative, religious-dominated society within their own region of the world. And in a weird way, many of these right-wing groups in the States wouldn't mind seeing that in the United States as well. Less secular global government, more conservative social order.
There is certainly a convergence of ideology. Anytime where you're willing to adopt a completely theologically driven political agenda that says God legitimizes mass murder in the name of purifying your society of unclean elements, you have the basis for an alliance. It may not be a functional alliance, but it's certainly an ideological alliance and a commonality of vision. And we see that between the radical right in the United States and Al-Qaeda. And we even see that, again, in some of the statements of the more mainstream, so to speak, leaders of the religious right, like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, who have millions of followers, who were not shunned, but who were, in fact, invited on to the daytime talk shows and the morning news shows the day after they blamed America for the attacks of September 11th.
Because of our social disintegration. In fairness, Jerry Falwell did back away from those comments.
Backed and filled very quickly, absolutely, because he saw how tremendously that had hurt him. But that has not stopped others on the Christian right from making similar statements. And indeed, I think that they're actually quite widely held by many, many people who actually do share that belief, as they stated, that this was somehow a God's retribution for America having sinned.
Divine justice. Daniel Levitas, hang on. We're going to take another call. Janine is on the line calling from Franklin, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Janine.
Hi, how are you?
We're very well, thanks.
Good. Listen, are you aware of organizations on the other end of the political spectrum that are somehow galvanized by September 11th? I'm thinking of, like, the Earth Liberation Front, an environmental extremist group, or, you know, the sort of violent protesters at the World Trade Organization meeting in Seattle who see the U.S. as an oppressive force globally, particularly corporate America, might strangely applaud, you know, the destruction of a corporate icon like the World Trade Center.
So the anti-globalization crowd?
Yeah, and the anti-U.S., anti-capitalist corporate sentiment, which in some ways parallels Osama bin Laden from sort of a left-wing extreme or environmental extremist group as any kind of threat in this situation.
Let's pose the question. Daniel Levitas, I don't know if your expertise extends to the left wing. What do you know?
Well, I don't claim to be an expert on Earth Liberation Front. I don't think that any of those groups have issued the kinds of bellicose statements that we've seen coming from the Aryan Nations and neo-Nazi groups. I think that your caller is making a legitimate point to the extent that there are groups and individuals on the political left in this country who have sought, in my opinion, excessively to try and rationalize the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and somehow explain this as the justifiable retribution for decades of bad American foreign policy, be it our funding of death squads in Latin America or other, in my opinion, mistakes that America has made in terms of its foreign policy, but carrying that to an extreme and basically saying, well, you know, we can understand why somebody would do this instead of condemning it wholeheartedly and seeing it for what it is, which is the act of a kind of theologically genocidal movement of violent Islamic fanatics. And
Janine, thanks for your call. You know, I'm struck though by the thought that the big steamroller now being built to attempt to roll over international terrorism may ultimately come to some of these affect the extremist groups within the United States as well, the kind of public disgust with extremism when it gets demonstrated in a World Trade Center kind of calamity.
Well, we saw this after Oklahoma City. The militia movement surged initially from all the publicity in the first 12 months after Oklahoma City, and then they went into the tank. And they went from some 800 groups to some 200 groups. The problem was the people who remained with the militia movement were much harder core and became even more more radicalized by the experience. I do think that this experience of September 11th and shows like this, as we educate the American population, and hopefully people will translate that focus onto domestic terrorist groups like the Army of God and say, you know, here are people who've been murdering folks for years, terrorizing healthcare providers. They are a terrorist group. Why doesn't the FBI go after an organization like this and shut it down for its criminal behavior and criminal activity? That I think and I hope will happen, but by the same token, I think, again, as we discussed earlier, we're going to see the ante upped and probably some attempts by domestic right-wing groups to try and capitalize on this situation or a lone individual go out and do something that's crazy.
Daniel Levitas, we only have another minute, but what's the level of sophistication with these groups? The language is harsh, but not necessarily sophisticated. What about their organization or capacity to act?
Well, first of all, you shouldn't underestimate the enemy, be they Al-Qaeda or be they neo-Nazis. Sophistication, a fertilizer bomb is not that sophisticated a device. It killed 168 people. Nobody knew what hit them. Anthrax, to make the stuff's a little more sophisticated, but as we've heard from sources in Washington, access to a university laboratory and maybe a PhD in biology, and you could have done it. Are there people who sympathize with the neo-Nazi movement who have high degrees in biology and access to university laboratories? Yes, 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 they do. Could they mastermind a September 11th-style attack in America? I don't think so. Could they do something very destructive that could kill and harm a lot of people and create fear and terror? Absolutely they could, and they talk about it all the time.
Daniel Levitas, we're out of time right here. Thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
Daniel Levitas is an expert on right-wing hate groups and the author of a forthcoming book about militia groups in the United States. You can learn more about the subject at our website. Click on WBUR.org, special coverage. Now, Halloween with real monsters. Jimmy Tingle is a humorist, an actor, and a writer. He says that this October 31st, it's the routine encounters that have him jumping out of his skin.
This Halloween, we don't need costumes to scare us. We're already scared. I shared an elevator last week with a dark-skinned man carrying a black leather bag. A soft, paranoid voice whispered to my subconscious, "He's from the Middle East." For all I really know, he's Puerto Rican, a Yankee fan, and born and raised in Manhattan. But now, everything's changed. The elevator door closed, leaving just the two of us. The voice got a little louder. My adrenaline started pumping. I tried to study the brown man with the black bag without him knowing it. He stared at the floor, and then he stared at the ceiling. He knew what I was thinking. The elevator lights indicate which floor we were on. 8, 9, 10, 11. I can't stop thinking about his bag. I can feel my own heart beat. My imagination overtakes the speed with which the elevator rises. I thought of the ease with which anyone can park in the underground garage. I remembered that building security didn't ask me to show any identification. I thought of how anyone can just walk off the street and enter almost any building in America and get on an elevator, like this one. Before September 11th, a dark-skinned man on an elevator in downtown Boston would be just another example of our rich and diverse culture in full bloom, one more fruit-bearing tree in the landscape of our global village. Last week, as the elevator approached the 34th floor, I thought to myself, what if there's a bomb in the bag? Please, forgive my irrational fear, but I've been terrorized, and I'm not alone. Anthrax in the Congress, anthrax at the Supreme Court, anthrax at the post office. These people are evil. Imagine trying to poison us with our own junk mail. It's the work of the devil. Baby powder on the bathroom floor. Call the cops. Someone's trying to kill us. The police are so overburdened right now that if they found a bag of white powder on you that was cocaine, they'd probably let you go.
We can release him, Captain. Thank God. It was only cocaine.
Halloween usually allows us to make fun of being scared. Not this year. We're already there. Children with sheets over their heads don't remind me of Casper the Friendly Ghost. They remind me of the women of Afghanistan. I don't need an 8-year-old dressed up as Osama bin Laden ringing my doorbell. Trick or treat, Mr. Tingle. Ah, it's the Taliban. I knew they'd find me.
Jimmy Tingle is a stand-up comic, writer, and actor. He lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Over the next few weeks, you'll be hearing more radio diaries from around the country. We'd like to hear from you. Send your submissions by email. The address is special@wbur.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Happy Halloween. You're listening to special coverage from WBUR Boston.